Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, before this show starts, just want to let you know that over on Red Men Plus, our subscription service, we've got tons and tons of Liverpool content in podcast form as well. You love podcasts, we love making podcasts. Go and check it all out. That's redmenplus.com. Sign up for as little as £5 a month. You will not regret it. Now, enjoy the show.
Hello everyone, it is the Red Men Originals podcast. I'm Paul Machin, Chris Page, Chloe Blocks and Steve Hoare on the couches with me.
How are you feeling this week?
Better?
You were a bit of a sourpuss last week.
And all week that followed, and the pre-match Wolves shows were...
Oh, that was tough, to be honest.
I had to send you a text.
I nearly texted you and asked you to come in.
I texted him and said cheer up.
Cheer up, misery ass, I think was the...
Do you know what, though? You're actually older now than you are last week, so...
What? That's true for everyone.
That's how age works.
But she's done that deliberately to be horrible, because, like, that's... Why would you be like that?
Your lip gloss looks shit.
Shit gloss, am I right? Let's talk about Liverpool, but first, we've got a kick-off question. It comes from Hitchin Baz. He says, if you could swap, brackets, quantum leap style with one Liverpool player for one game, which player and what game would it be? Now, just to explain, Chloe, you clearly have no idea what quantum leap is.
I'm not quite sure.
They just rebooted it, but it's fine.
So, basically, one man travels within his lifetime, leaping from life to life, trying to put right what once went wrong and hoping each time his next leap will be the leap home. I think that's right. But anyway, the idea is this guy would jump into someone's body, they'd have a situation that he had to put right often. And he would have to, like, you know, so like he'd stop someone from getting killed or whatever. And then once he'd done it and he'd made everyone's life a bit better, he'd move on and that was the next episode. So
we're all going to have the same answer.
Stephen Gerrard.
Yeah.
We're bigger studs, Stephen. So I'm going to be Stephen Gerrard before the Chelsea game. I put like 9-inch studs on my boots.
I like the idea that with that the story would be is that you think your job is to stop Liverpool losing or whatever, but it's not. It's just so no one can sing that fucking song about him slipping on his arse. He doesn't even have to stop them scoring. He just needs to stand up. That's all, and that's how you complete your mission. And just, yeah, not that.
I don't know if I would, you know. I think we've had something similar to this question before, whereby Liverpool win the league, then do we ever get Jurgen Klopp? And that then means that you don't get the European Cup and all the stories that we've had. So, can I offer my take on this? I would just like to go to Carragher's last game and have a go at scoring that goal for him and just bookending his career nicely. I don't think it's going to have a huge impact on Liverpool as it is today.
Do you think
he
could have scored from the halfway line?
It wasn't the halfway line.
It was a good 30 odd yards from goal.
If we go and we expand the question slightly and just get to go again until it happens, because, like, look, I think you're just as likely to slip as Stevie. Like, you know, I think we're going to need multiple attempts at this anyway.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm going to do any damage. but per se to anyone
if
or
I'm
anything.
Going, if I'm going back in time now, the technically the future from that moment's already happened. So like, am I not just dropping into that moment and then getting off again?
Well, no, you changed the course of history.
Have you not seen it, science fiction?
It's a bit crap, isn't it?
The whole of science fiction.
Well, no,
no,
just like,
I'm half with you.
What you watch?
Time travel stuff is a bit rubbish. In
what
general.
The fuck?
Time travel's the best stuff.
It's not crap. It's not great.
Listen, see, we can't all be as into EastEnders as you are. I'm just saying.
Just because I look like the EastEnders characters, I do not watch.
You look like 75% of the cast of EastEnders.
Yeah, I know, but I don't watch it. I think I might go back to last year sometime.
Yeah.
I would have half liked to win the league. I'm trying to think, did anyone massively fuck up last year where I could fix?
What about if we went back and took over one of the players in the Liverpool squad, it doesn't matter who, on the day that City lost when we won the league?
So they could score before City got back?
No, so we were just in the hotel celebrating winning the league.
That's an option.
Oh.
So we don't actually have an impact on anything, but get to experience that
just
fucking
Adam,
night.
Just be Adam Lallana bouncing around.
Loving it,
form
like watching Jürgen dance and all that type of stuff. Yeah. That might be the best one. It didn't say Liverpool game.
Is there an event in Liverpool history that you think you possess the requisite skill to significantly change things for the better?
Yeah, a corner from Iago Aspas from Chelsea.
Just whip that
exact
in.
Game.
Just whip it in.
Do you know what I mean?
That's the one moment. Didn't he score from that? I reckon I could be able to cross a ball or at least pass it 5 yards to someone else in red. I mean, I'm just guessing, I reckon I've got it in my locker.
If it was not Liverpool, I'd have went to be like an Aston Villa player last season, the goalie, and moved when the ball was coming towards me on three separate occasions.
Love it.
But again, maybe that, because it was also, I mean, I reckon I could have saved three of those goals, or three of them, I reckon I've had the chance at. I know it's not Liverpool per se, but it kind of relates. So I'm cheating a little bit, but it'd have been boss if the Reds were doing the league, wouldn't it? And in the end, it was crap because we never.
That's exactly right. You've absolutely nailed that.
Great analysis there. Yeah, I'm going for that one then.
Yeah, maybe there's just that the day that, and it's not a match per se, but maybe like Steven Gerrard's, the game before he agrees to join LA Galaxy and just being like, you just don't sign, whatever the day, you know, goes and sign the contract and you just don't, and you just stick it out.
Lock yourself in the cupboard.
Yeah. No, Brendan! La, 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 la.
Luis Suarez before the flight to Barcelona. Yeah. And you rip your passport up or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Or just give him, you know, take him to a lesser in cultural sensitivity, you know what I mean? And maybe, you know, imagine what Luis Suarez could have been if he just took away one of his hothead moments. Like, I mean, to be fair, 13, 14, if he'd actually played in the first 10 games of the season.
We might have had a chance.
I mean, I'm ridiculous. Like, how many goals would he actually have scored that season if he'd played been able to play the full raft of it? Yeah, there you
good
go.
Question,
oh,
that.
No, I know what I'd do, actually. Kiev, Karius, I'd move Karius.
Actually, you know what, genuinely, because you could get battered anyway in that game because they score some boss goals, but you're right. There's not a goalkeeper in the world who's played any 11-a-side footy who couldn't do exactly what Karius did and therefore
do better.
Just fractionally better.
It was also much better than Madrid and much better than Paris, the entire build-up of it. It was Ukraine, it was...
There is a sliding doors moment in the life of Loris Karius, and I don't know when he started dating the letter Liotta, but I noticed that on his Instagram over Christmas, and it led him to what looks like a very wonderful, wonderful life. So,
he's chilling up in Newcastle now, he's going to win the league.
Yeah.
He's going to get the medal.
Yeah, he's going to get that. He should lift the Premier League trophy and drop in a joke, Karius! And then everyone goes, and then he'll just go and become an Instagram model for the rest of his life. Best buddies for life. Right, let's move things on. Great question, Baz. Wonderful stuff. We're going to talk Wolves. In part two, we're going to be doing a new segment that I'm loosely calling Agony Rant.
Ah, I get it, because Agony Ant.
Thanks, Lee. Yeah, that's right. and then we're going to talk about Liverpool versus Chelsea. But yes, firstly, Liverpool won a game of football. Steve Haw. Liverpool beat Wolves in the FA Cup by 1-0. And look, obviously, the title of this podcast is slightly not salacious as such, but you know, it's, you know, you've got to make bold proclamations.
You've lent into it.
Yeah,
100%. You haven't gone full clickbait, but you're like, it's kind of on the hook. You haven't quite got it.
All I can describe it as, it was pleasingly robust, and I'm at this stage where that's kind of what I want to see more than games where we side teams open from left and right. I just want to see us fight and battle and be combative and be very hard to beat.
We haven't so much turned the corner, but like, we've slammed the brakes on so that we're not driving off the cliff. It's kind of like, the corner's there still, and we still have to get round it. And we're not going head first into the sea.
So, well, we figured out how it might be possible to turn the corner.
We might have found the brake and maybe reverse. We're all right. We're not heading to it. But again, it was more a case of, like you say, it was just like, don't be easy to play against. Yeah. Absolute worst. We might be crap. We might be, but don't make it easy for teams to play against. At least if someone's going to have to beat you, like they have to score good goals, and you don't just throw them in and you don't make life easy for them. And that, it was a very much changed Liverpool side, but I felt like they all had that MO. Everyone's first job seemed to be, we're narrow, we're compact, we're horrible to play against, we're going to kick you, we're going to foul you, and we're not going to let you counter-attack us, and then we'll have a moment will appear where one of our lad will get a bit of quality and score, and that's fine. I'm all right with that. It came earlier than you'd expected, but it just felt like the MO was, we're getting to 90 minutes and they haven't scored, and then we'll back ourselves to get one down the other end because we've got quality in the team. We've got lads on the bench who can score a goal. Yeah. And when you're in and I was thinking this side should have approached Brighton. We're not good enough to go and just play footy at the moment against these teams, against anybody. We're just not in that good of a state in terms of.
Do you reckon there's an ego involved in that? From the coaching staff to some extent, of like, go, no, we're this good, we'll continue to play the way we really want to play and blah, blah, blah. It must be hard to then, because Klopp said it, come back to Kiev, like, we're playing Real Madrid, people go, what are you going to do? And he's like, well, I'm not going to change my game plan. I'm not going to tell them everything we have told them that got us there now goes out the window. But sometimes you kind of, not throw it all out, but sometimes you do have to go, we're going in the wrong direction here, we need to do something.
And it's
different.
Easy to do that when you keep getting beat. It's getting to a Champions League final, going, we're changing how we play. It was like, well, it got us to a Champions League final. It was getting us beat every time we got on the pitch. So something had to change. So it probably was a bit humbling, I think. You know, I said on the final word, don't want to turn the too much. It was like, I do think also a message was sent to other players, like, not one of yous as deserved your place, really. Like, I could drop any one of yous and not one of yous could come and knock on my door and say, what, you're out of order. Because every single person, so Jürgen's kind of shown that as you didn't play, I have got options. You know, I don't have to pick you guys all the time, and maybe I've been a bit hesitant to drop a few of yous, but like every single person now, you know, you look at a centre back, well, Matip probably thinking about Gomez played quite well. You look at midfield, Fabinho, we'll be looking at Ann Henderson, looking at Keita and Bacetic, going, oh, hang on a minute, those lads have done okay. Oxlade Chamberlain, looking at Carvalho or Elliot. So I think that was important as well. What you don't want to play the backups, and then the backups think the gaff out, and then you're everywhere going, oh my god, now where do we turn?
In some regards, Claude, it being a cup replay actually did really play into our hands, because it was something me and Chris were talking about in the team news reaction before the team came out, of you double down on the senior lads, because the senior lads are the ones who should be bearing responsibilities. They're the ones who are meant to be carrying the team out of it. It's a worry when you're having to rely on younger players, because they're young players. They shouldn't be having that kind of heaped on their shoulders too much. But the fact that we did have this almost extra game, you could go back and, you know, and a big game at the weekend, it weirdly kind of worked out well, because it did give him a little bit more of a free pass to make those changes. Whereas if we were going straight into Chelsea off the back of Brighton, I'm not sure you go straight into it with that team doesn't start against Chelsea having lost the previous one to Brighton.
Yeah, it did help us, and it gave the lads an opportunity to show that they're not just happy to sit on the bench, and that, you know, they're looking at what the rest of the team is going through, and they're stepping up and they're being counted. And I really hope it's sending a message to the lads like Jordan Henderson. I mean, he's your club captain, and if he doesn't start against Chelsea, I mean, he can look, I said it on the final word, he can look at that FA Cup game and go, well, yeah, but it's the FA Cup. We were probably going to make changes anyway. We usually do every year, so don't worry about my place. But because you're in really bad form, if he doesn't start against Chelsea, I think you're really sending a message for him to step up his game. And I've just singled out Jordan Anderson. There's about 8 or 9 people who you could say that with. Mm-hmm. But it definitely helped us because it gave us, you know, the free pass to do it and no one fume about it. And it also gave us the chance to actually change something and be up against an easier side.
Yeah.
And they made some changes as well, so that certainly helped. But a big performance and youngsters stepping up for Liverpool.
Just going back a little bit to your sort of first question, actually. I think it's easy to forget sometimes that I don't think Klopp realised it was a slump until it was blindingly obvious, because we were still getting the wins, we just weren't playing very well.
There might have been underlying numbers in terms of attacking that made them think,
maybe, but you've got the Brentford result, which is bad, and then you follow that up with Brighton, and then you realise it's not a blip, it's a slump, and then you'll have to change something. I think from the performance side of things, when you come back off a break, and a break that no one's ever had in the middle of the season before because of the World Cup, just getting the results is actually okay those days. So I think it's easy for us to lump everything in all at once, whereas they were probably like, well, we got a couple of wins there, we didn't play our best, we'll turn it around type of thing. And then when you don't turn it around, you go and change something. Let's not forget as well, he already did change something against Brighton. He threw Thiago in the 10. So I don't think the ego thing was this game. I think it was the game before, but we're just kind of forgetting about it.
Yeah.
And he's tried to change something, and then he changes it again against Wolves, and we get something from it because we look more like Liverpool. But also, I think it's important to state as well, we actually weren't very good second half. Yeah. With the ball at our feet, we didn't have the ball a lot, but that's a good thing in some regards. Again, what you were talking about earlier on, being able to dig in, being able to manage the game, keep them at an arm's length, make sure that they're not able to get a goal. These are all qualities that I respect in a side. So he'll have had two good halves of football there for two completely different reasons.
And the kind of halves that we needed, that's funny. Obviously, the moment the lights go out in the first minute, and we made a joke about, oh, is Kane going to come out? Seeing someone done it with The Undertaker, spot on, stop comedy. I had a little moment in hindsight of like, I wonder if actually Buvac came back and secretly he was just sat on the bench with a hood with his hood up. That was the return of Zeljko Buvac as Liverpool. The lights went out at Molineux and came back up, and all of a sudden Liverpool were playing counter pressing style.
So, Alan, anyone who watched it on BBC will have seen it. We obviously had the commentary off. So afterwards, when the lights
she sounds
off,
thick, and you should lose me that video.
No, Shearer literally says, "Oh God, we had a power cut. The lights have gone out, and we've heard Danny Murphy's phone go off." So he threw him under the bus as well.
Going back to like the changes and like he making the stuff and all that kind of stuff. I do wonder, Brighton. I think it was the first time really where he properly, like, I know they haven't been good this season, but like they got played off the park bad. But he had changed something. So I give them credit that was Saturday at 3 o'clock. You play on Tuesday at 8 o'clock, and you've got a team that, I don't, God knows that team's ever been picked at the same time. Probably not, you would guess, ever before that 11. But they look like they'd worked on it really. So whatever they did in the AXA on probably Monday, because they'd have been off Sunday, to get from what they were and a shambles to what they wear on Tuesday nights, I think that takes it. They should be really, really applauded for that, the players and the coach and staff, because that isn't easy to do. Like, everyone seemed to know what they were meant to be. Like, the press was so much better. People helping their mates out. They were obviously aware that the fact that Wolves are going to try and go long to Traore, so make sure someone goes and helps Costas. I think Costas is actually better in the air, quite good in terms of than Robertson, which might be one of the reasons they put him in there. I think he battles better aerially. Just things that were rather well thought out. That's something. Because like,
we probably, Steve, you probably, what makes it even better is they have 2 days off after the game. Yeah. So they probably wouldn't have had any actual on-pitch thing until Tuesday morning.
They might have went through Tuesday. And I think that's worth noting. And also, I think it's fair to say, like, you mentioned before about being humble enough to admit, actually, we need to go back to basics. The players buying into it, the managers. And also, you mentioned before about turning the corner. You were never going to go from the shambles of the Brentford and especially Brighton, which is the worst I think I've ever seen Liverpool play in my life. Genuinely, I was
on the clock.
But I mean, it's borderline Hodgson-esque. That's how bad it was. It was Rodgers, Stoke. Remember that? It was all those horrendous performances. It was as bad as anything. You were never going to turn that round into winning Wolves 4-0 straight away. So I think I called it, like, you know, the green shoots of recovery. That's kind of what it is. I remember under Rodgers for enough. Remember we went to United, we beat 3-0, but we played like three at the back. And you look back, and then after that, we had a little run. They got beat, but they played better. And then that kind of did start turning the corner. The hope is that, right, you have addressed it. You've found something that works, whether you stick with it players-wise or whatever, but you've at least got a bit of confidence because the manager looked broken after Brighton. Like, that's as down as you've ever really seen him after the footy game. I've seen us lose in finals.
I've never seen him really, I genuinely apologise.
We've seen him, we've been beaten in plenty, and he's lost loads of finals from his career, and he's never looked as down and as downtrodden as he did at the weekend.
Lost as well.
He just looked forlorn. It was horrendous, really. I was there on the ground, and you could see from his body language was shocking. It was like, oh my God, we broke this fella, yeah. So the fact that it's turned around a little bit, I think it bodes well. But like I say, it only counts for something if it is the start of something.
Going back to the title and turn the corner. No, we've not turned the corner. But what we have done is we've given us a foundation to build on. Simple as it is for me.
Yeah, it felt more, like, as we say, it felt more recognisable. I watched that and went, I can understand how we can replicate that. And how that will lead us to not losing random games of football, because that's what every game, even when we played at our best at times this season, I look back to it, it's not been shite all season long. There's been some real high points along the way, and we played great attacking football when it's really worked. But at no point have you ever felt like, well, they're just not going to score here. And that was the first game in a lot that I can remember in a long while where it genuinely felt like, yeah, it was the way the midfield three functioned. It was the most Klopp-like, and it's mad because we were a bit like, what the fuck is that midfield?
Legs is what it was. It was lots of legs.
Yeah. But it wasn't. It was loads of really small people. There's been like a clamouring to get back to the almost like the Brexit midfield of, you know, and not necessarily in personnel, but the style that like Henderson, Wijnaldum, Milne used to have, which was seen as like this all fighting, all action, but not necessarily a particularly guileful midfield. But instead, it kind of like we went, nope, we're going to go all in. Like, we're going completely all in on this, and we've put three really skillful lads in the midfield who have got loads of energy and we're prepared to dig in. But it worked brilliantly. The way they all pulled for each other.
I think Naby's the best presser we've got as well, and I think that really helps. Like, his injury issues aside, we get all that. But like, if you want to play a pressing game, he's in the team for me. Like, he is the best at it. You've got to worry, you've got to protect him, and don't listen. Chris has sat on the watch along yesterday. That was his 19th or 20th time. He's played 90 minutes for us. Yeah. He doesn't last 90 minutes. He's either coming on or coming off. So that's obviously a consideration. But I think him setting the tone with the press, because again, I was there at Brighton, mate, and he went and no one followed him. And at one point, I was like, what is the point of this then? Everyone bought into it because he does go, and he's really good. He's really good at sensing when to go and when not to go. And I think everyone bought into it. And the fact that What I was most impressed with is it's really, really simple. And I know Chloe mentioned this as well earlier on the show, but like just running, having the ability. It's all like the knowledge I need to get there, but having the physical capability of it, which Stefan Bajcetic certainly had. So if they did bypass the first press, they weren't playing it into a number 10 who could just turn around and do what he wanted. Yeah, Stefan Bajcetic was up their arse, basically.
But we also really saw helps. Chloe is, again, it's like the lads pitching in for each other. It was a point I made last night, was when you've got your best players on the pitch, I think they put almost too much trust in how good certain players are. So you're making that extra step forward because you're trying to shortcut it. You're not working your way up through the gears. You're trying to jump straight into fifth or whatever because you know, well, look, Trent's going to find that pass, so it's not going to matter. Whereas it felt like they both Keita and Thiago had one eye on Bajcetic and the other eye on their respective fullbacks as well, and more maybe than they would have done in other situations, where if it was Trent or Robbo or Fabinho or whatever in that team. And so it meant that they were much closer to the dangers. They hunted much more in packs, and then they went. And again, that was just, again, it just clicked. It worked, and it's mad to say you should just do that, but there's obviously just been some X factor lacking from what we've been doing.
Yeah, I mentioned it on the first show where, and I don't want to say Henderson again because it sounds like I'm absolutely having him off. No, but like where he runs alongside players instead of putting a foot in, because he just thinks that, okay, well, if he gets past me for being used there, there's too much trust in where each other's going to be and when they're going to intervene, and, oh, you won't get past this lad. When yesterday it was very much like, right, if he gets past me, I'm fouling him because I don't know if anyone's behind me. And it was very, it was kind of, and I liked Bajetic doing it because it was kind of a case of, you know, when you've only just came in and you don't want to make it look bad if someone beat you and it's your fault. It wasn't like that. It was like, if he's getting past me, sand, I'll just bring them down and I'll take whatever card I'm going to take. And they were all switched on. Liverpool have not been switched on from set pieces, from throw-ins, from absolutely anything. And against Wolves, every single player on that pitch was switched on. Every single player was touch tight to their man for every set piece, for every throw-in, for every free kick that happened. Everyone was where they needed to be and constantly looking over the shoulders of where the next player was. He was going to run off them. They knew not to get too tight because there's someone else here. So the 1-2 is very simple. It was much more organised. They were much more solid. But they were also, they had so much more confidence in knowing, right, until he gets to a certain stage, that's when I push out. Or when a certain player is covering me, that's when I push out. And also the positions of certain people also obviously helped us. But yeah, it was a very mature professional performance from a couple of senior players, but quite a lot of kids as well. Yeah.
The thing that did it for me, and I don't think anybody that I've spoken to has mentioned this, but I feel...
I'd pick it. Go on, carry on.
What did you say?
I'm a big head.
Got a
boss point of you.
It was going to be. Now I'm just going
to
sit here.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
That's right.
Anyway, let's have our bit break.
It was the fullbacks. Like, I think that they allowed everybody else to go and do their game naturally because they sat in a bit more than what we've seen. Because we didn't have Trent Alexander-Arnold pushing up and going forwards, because we didn't have Andy Robertson pushing up and going forwards, the back four was a back four. It was a proper back four. Of course it gets forward. It's going to happen. There are going to be times when the centre-back brings the ball out. But generally speaking, the four stayed as a four, which allowed the three to go and do what they do. And one of the reasons it worked is because everything was in front of them.
Yep.
Didn't have to worry about, was Kostas ahead of me? They just knew he wasn't. Didn't have to worry about, was Milner ahead of me? They just knew that he wasn't. Which meant that Bajčetić had the entire game in front of him. It meant that Thiago and Keita were on a little string. The three forwards pressed really well. And then three midfielders pressed really well, knowing that they've still got that safety net. Whereas what we normally see is like we defend with essentially a box, don't we? You know, you've got the two centre-halves and you've got Thiago and Fabinho normally in front of them and everybody else is there, which is giving space down the wings. That space down the wings wasn't allowed because we had the two fullbacks tucked inside a lot more and everything else played off that.
And both of them just clearly were told, you've got a battle on your hands here.
Yep.
Kick people.
Yeah. you're battling, you know, particularly for Kostas Tsimikas, who did it the first minute prior to the lights going out, of like, oh God, that's going to be a big test for him. And we forget, we do this every time, and we're always reticent to do it live, because you should be, because you don't want to jinx things, but a David Shaw is fucking rubbish.
I said 3 minutes and he can't cross, yeah, and then shit myself for the next 45.
Exactly. Because every now and again, you know, like a broken clock's right twice a day, yeah. You know, it happens. He can score a goal every now and again and just put a good cross in every now and again. But there's a reason why you go back to Barcelona, and Barcelona, who at the time were rubbish, went, you're all right. We'll be having him. But the point is it's a physical combative thing. You've got to kick him and you've got to be in a scrap with him, and Costa stuck that really well. And the other side, Milner, and he typified it, because again, he set the tone. I know he tore us to pieces at Anfield, and he was just like, I'm just going to boot you. I'm going to boot you everywhere, mate. And actually, the midfield three, none of them are what you call your archetypal big crunching physical midfielders, but they're all pests.
Mate, they were going in for 50-50s and 60-40s and 40-60s and everything in between. Like, that's all. And we've seen lads pull out over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, he said, didn't he, afterwards, like, well, he made the point saying, well, it helps when you win your challenges. Yep. And I think that's a hint to the other lads. Like, because he said this, didn't he, after Brentford, don't win your challenge, you've got no chance. And
everyone won the battle last night.
Yeah, everyone was up against their man for the most part. I don't mean to piss on the parade too much, but like, Wolves are rubbish going forwards. The reason that they're bottom of the league or near this is because they can't score goals. So it's not a parade. I mean, like, they haven't really got a striker that you can rely on yet.
But the thing that's important to remember is they came to Anfield and caused so many problems.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we went to their home. They had arguably a better side on the pitch, and we had arguably a worse side on the pitch. Yep. So I know people are desperate to like undercut this, and I'm not going to sit here and say Liverpool season's fixed, hurrah, win ninth in the Premier League. But in terms of like judging a game in isolation, to go from Brighton, where everyone wanted to fucking never watch Liverpool play football again, to you hear the noise of the away support, and you know, and how made up everyone was in there, and you know, being able to go and people going to sing for the manager and show that backing, because they'd given them a response, the players had shown the fans, no, don't worry, it's not, fuck, we're going to fight, we're going to continue to work our way out of this. That was the big thing. I agree. If we just played Wolves in isolation there, I'd be much more on board with the whole, our Wolves are crap, they're getting relegated. Well, they've actually been quite good since Lopetegui's come in. And as I say, they should have beaten us at Anfield. You know, but for a mad VAR oversight, we should have been at that game. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
The other thing about us on the day was, it goes to show that when one person actually does their job correctly, it enables everyone else to fall into place as well. We were out of the ball quicker. And I think I mentioned it last week. I just wanted someone within the first 10 minutes to just hit someone. It doesn't mean taking a yellow card. I don't know why people think that every foul within the first 10 minutes. It's not. Just put one on one. And even if you just shove him in the back and give away a silly foul, as long as it's up there.
Just let him know. You're right.
It's not going to be easy. That's all you're saying. If you're going to go past me, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, exactly.
And every...
I did that, didn't he, very early on. Yeah. It was as close to a yellow as not being a yellow can be, kind of thing. And I'm fine with it. What?
You know, are you sure? Because you all fucking laughed at me last week when I said bring Milner into the side.
In midfield.
No, I'm
I said you want to be careful saying that James Milner's the solution to our midfield problems on the internet is all I want.
I think Clay made a good point there before about like if one person doesn't do their job with the Jurgen Klopp system, the issue is it's so dependent on everyone always being at it that if one of them has a bad day, it's bad. If two or three of them have a bad day, you're fucked.
Yeah.
It felt like yesterday. Like you could, a couple of those could have had lesser games and you'd have been all right. You needed a couple of, like, for example, with all due respect to Fabio Carvalho and Cody Gakpo, they were fine, but they weren't outstanding. They did a good job. Mm-hmm. But like usually, Liverpool need everyone to be like, and if you're not, everything struggles. It feels like that. If that's the way they're going to do things, you'll be able to carry a few more players. You'll still need your DM and your centre mids to be busy and about. And we haven't shown any inkling of that being happening over the last few league games, but. It felt like at times we've been a house of cards and you think one out of me has been falling apart. Like, I think that's a bit more like Chris mentioned, foundations and stability.
Yeah.
That felt a bit more like that.
I loved the challenge that it laid down for the players on the pitch, to be honest. Yeah. And even the substitutions, because we weakened the side with the substitutions. We just did, you know.
And worse and all the good players come on.
Well, yeah, but we
put fucking Salah up front and he's not a centre-forward. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
Nobody else we could do with that. Yeah, it's mad.
But, and that's the thing, isn't it? We had a team of lads who were round pegs and round holes for the most part. James Milner aside, who can be literally any shape he wants to be at any point, because he's so malleable. Yeah. But that's it. Everyone had a role, knew the role, and was made for that role.
And it was also a case of, you knew at some stage, okay, Adama Traore might get past Costas at some point, because he's bound to. If he runs into the ground that much, and to be fair, we retain possession. No one's speaking about that. We retain possession against Brighton. every single set piece or something, they were constantly back on it. Every throw went, they constantly had the ball back. We gave our defenders something to look at with and a bit of respite for them to analyse and see what's happening in front of them. But also, when Costas might have been beaten the last 10 minutes, don't worry, because Joe Gomez won his individual battle.
It felt like we knew what they were going to do, and I've not felt like that all season long. You know, and that's the one thing.
You're talking
Liverpool?
About Liverpool, because I agree. If you're talking about Liverpool, because I felt like I knew what Liverpool's players were going to do last night, and I've definitely not felt like that this year.
Yeah, you know, but like in terms of like,
I know what they're going to do. Give it to the other team, and they're going to score a goal. Yeah.
But that's been
bend over.
The thing that's typified Liverpool over the years is that thing of like, you watch them figure it out, and then we get in their heads, and all of a sudden they can't turn, they can't breathe, we know where their passes are going before they even know where they're going, and that was much more like that last night. And again, it felt like we'd scouted them, like we knew which areas they were going to target and how we were going to deal with them targeting. That's the point we talked about this on the Instant Match Reaction last night, Chris. Naby Keita basically played right back for the last 10 minutes of the game. You know, like, he dug in for the team because he knew that's where their threats were going to be. They were going to work it to the wide lads, and they were going to try and get crosses into the box. And Naby Keita, the guy who's going to leave on a free transfer, the guy with all the injury problems, was doing dirty work for Liverpool at the back. It was great.
Absolutely cold to like the dominant person. Like, we've gone to another place and gone, yeah, you have your way with us. In fact, the 3 points are our wife and they are yours. You take them away. Yes, like against Wolves, we were like, no, hang on a minute. We might actually prevent you from absolutely taking the piss out of us a little bit, which was nice to see. It's crazy to say, like, and obviously Chelsea's on the horizon. There isn't a single player who played against Brighton who can moan if they don't play against Chelsea.
Yeah.
Not a single one of them. If any one of them moans, you just showed them a clip of them against Brighton, and then a clip of whoever replaced them against them.
The only player might be Thiago who would go, come on, boss. I mean, I tried to do what you asked, but you fucked that shit up.
I am not a 10. If you're picking a number 10, I'm with you. Like, I'll bench myself. But yeah, there are very few of them who can go, I'm sound, I'm all right. Like, I deserve to play. Credit to the young lads and credit to the fringe players, because that isn't easy. There's a lot of pressure on you for you to go in and just now. Do it around. If any of them don't play against Chelsea, they've got every right to go moan.
There was pressure on Carvalho, wasn't there, because he's not been seen. There was pressure on Harvey Elliott because he's not played that right wing for ages.
Like, Chetage had been injured, only just coming back. There's everything. Gomez was getting. Everyone was lynching Joe Gomez before a few weeks ago. So there was a pressure on quite a few.
And they all stood up in their own ways. It was very good indeed. Right, okay, cool. We're going to be chatting Chelsea in part two. We're also going to be, because off the back of last week, which ended up being a huge sort of like
birthday celebration.
Pleasant birthday celebration where everyone was dead happy about everything.
It was my favourite your birthday ever.
Sad. I'm going to...
You had such a shit time.
In years to come, like, what did you do for your 40th? Well, I fucking had a fight about Moises Caicedo. Who's Moises Caicedo? No idea. I just remember the name. It'll never leave me before. Did you go to the Bahamas? No. I sat on a couch and moaned all the fucking Brighton movie.
So we're going to talk. We're introducing the agony rant section. So if anyone's got anything they want to get off
their
chest.
Are you going to moan about last week's podcast?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Anything Liverpool related. I think it'll be a bit shorter this week than it was. Maybe it would have been a week ago and so on. But we'll try and keep this as a regular thing so that, because I think there's a lot of just whinging that goes on, and then people live with the whinge on and on and on and on, whereas we're just going to get it out there, we're going to discuss them, draw a line under them, and then we'll move on to what follows afterwards. So yes, a short break. We've mentioned Costas Tsimikas a few times. If you really like old Timmy, then we've got a signed Costas Tsimikas shares.
Nice modern reference for them.
Competition prize over on redmondplus.com. Here's the details.
Come on, Paul, I need to Trump.
Of that. Trump.
A few weeks ago, I was lucky enough to sit down with Liverpool left-back Costas Tsimikas. I was able to get an interview with him, get some quick-fire questions done, and I was lucky enough to host a Q&A with him and John Aldridge at Hotel Anfield in Liverpool. Now, while I was there, I also managed to get him to sign this Liverpool shirt for you guys. So if you want to be in with a chance to win this incredible signed Costas Tsimikas shirt, then all you need to do is go to redmenplus.com and sign up as a club legend for this month. Prize draw.
Anyway, we're back. I don't know what Chris has gone. He's just gone. But perhaps that wasn't a Trump so much as more that he needed.
He's
I feel like he was slightly underselling when he was getting what he was in need of there. So yeah, Chris will return. Told him he had 30 seconds. Yeah, if you want to get involved.
No.
If you want to get involved.
Was it more than a Trump?
It was a wig. And a fart.
Pull the couch back forward as well. Yeah, welcome back to the podcast. Chris Pajak and all of our wonderful audience live with us on YouTube right now. Yeah, we're going to be talking.
So
did you ever wank?
No. Tell you what, I nearly wet myself.
Yeah?
Never wet myself on a show before. Well, only once.
Just a fractional. Agony rant. Has anyone got something relating to Liverpool that they would like to get off their chests right now? Steve Horat. Oh. You feel like a man who's always got an axe to grind.
Really? I wouldn't agree. Yeah, but loads. what's doing my head in at the moment? Well, being crap is doing my head in, so, but I think we've half addressed that in the previous part. I'll be honest, I'm starting to get annoyed at the takeover stuff because nothing's happening. And I think that is what it is. I think there's too many people out there who are trying to make it seem closer than something actually is. Like, we've heard today that they're after an investment rather than a sale.
Which is not finding out.
It's just reiterating the thing. There's just a lot of bullshit going on. And that's kind of getting on my nerves at the moment. My preference would be that they sell and find a buyer who takes over and goes again. But we're not there yet. And we're not anywhere. There's nothing. And whatever does happen, it's not going to be quick. Everyone keeps going back to Chelsea. That was such a different situation.
It was a deadline.
Because there was a hard limit and they had to sell, and it was the highest bit. That was a completely different situation. We're going to get sold or investment. Man United are going to get sold and or investment. It's not going to be quick.
The United, the bid for United things, I think, has probably exacerbated people's feelings on this.
That's exactly what we said when it happened. Yeah. That it was not a good thing for Liverpool that they're going up for sale at the same time.
And I stick by it. My preference would be now, I'm at a stage where I think, unless if the aim is to find an investor who's going to come in and just go, here's all the transfer money and we don't want no power. I mean, if that's the fair play, if you can find that person, I mean, going back to being a fucking cuckold before, then you're half getting that a little bit. But I'm getting the whipping up of fans to then be proven wrong and then everyone gets angry. And again, I'm aware this is half a social media thing, well, three quarters, but it does also seep into life and stuff as well a little bit. That is pissing me off, I'll be honest with you. It's going to take ages. It's not going to be quick. It's not going to be quick at all. We're going to have to get our heads around the fact that it's not going to be quick. Billion-pound companies do not get sold in an hour or in a few days. That statement of that we're looking for investment and all that kind of stuff, it could take a year.
It's from Football Manager experience where you just get an email one day in your inbox that says, new investors have come in and cleared the club debts and made significant funds available for transfers. Like, oh, great.
Nice one.
Yeah, great. Lovely. Cheers. Thanks.
If that happens, I'm all shut.
What the fuck am I supposed to do now, knobhead?
Yeah.
I think that's what it comes down to, is everyone wanted it done in January and they had unrealistic expectations, didn't they? But this is opinion, not fact. No way is this news. This is just pure opinion. I still think they're looking for a full sale.
I think they would.
And I think, because I surmise that basically it's like when you go for a transfer. You find out whether the player's interested and you find out through sources what you think the club's gonna want to need in terms of money. So then you don't look ridiculous when you just go, okay, they want 100 million. There's no point in me making a bid. I've got 50 to spend or whatever. I think there will be consortiums around the world, be it American, be it Middle Eastern, whatever, that will be going, right, brief 3 billion, what are we talking about here? And then FSG come out with, we're looking for minority shareholders, i.e. shut the fuck up, we want 4 billion type of thing. Like, you know what I mean? I still think that that's what they want more than anything, and I know that they're briefing otherwise. The news is that they want a minority stake buying, that's it. But I do think it's for sale. It's just a guess.
I think it always has been. I think if someone came in with the right offer, it was always a sale. It was never not going to be.
Because why wouldn't it be? It's the perfect point where Liverpool is probably almost 10 times as valuable as when they bought it, because they bought it for just under 300 million. We're talking in excess of 3 billion quid now. They're at a point where I think FFP doesn't work, and FSG's model therefore is going to always be a struggle to stay at the top of the game. Yeah. And I think as pure businessmen, they're going to look at that and go, "What a fucking great return on investment we've had. We've won everything. We've managed to grow the value of the company to 10 times what we bought it for. And we now know that to stay at the top, we're going to have to spend around about at least probably a third of the overall takings and revenues of Liverpool Football Club almost every single year just to stay at the top. And that's not factoring in fucking wages and running the club and everything else that entails."
I'm not sure you'd go to the banks that they apparently went to at the start if you were only after a minority stake.
They did last time, I believe, though. Did last time at Redbird. So you can't. I do believe that is the case.
I don't think you'd make it as public. I don't know. I'm with you. It feels like to me that they're trying to sell. And this is the point, like, they probably will sell. And I think Liverpool will be taking over at some point. But, like, it's going to take time. It's not going to, like, there are people, you know, the FSG out stuff and all that. And I get it, people being pissed off at them because they're not exactly, like, you know, they're not angels. And no one's an angel. They're not angels. And they've done plenty right. They've done plenty wrong. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you can speed this process up. I don't think there's anywhere. It isn't like there's bids on the table and FSG are going, no. Because I tell you now, if someone bids for Liverpool, they will leak out to the press that they bid for Liverpool. Yeah. Yeah. No one's secretly bidding for Liverpool. Just not going to happen.
People are getting the ducks
up in a row as well, aren't they? That's the other thing. When you think of a massive consortium that's got 3-4 billion quid to spend and they're looking at it and going, right, Liverpool's for sale. Fuck, right. It's going to take time to raise capital and all that type of stuff as well on their end. I think the other thing I would say is it gets done before Klopp leaves. That's the one thing I do think. I think it's a much tougher sell once Jürgen leaves Liverpool Football Club.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why they've bitten the bullet on Salah's contract and they've given Jürgen the extended contract, because it's protecting the value of your club. Absolutely. Arsenal did a little version of this when Wenger was going, when they went and they gave Ozil the contract and they bought in Aubameyang and Mkhitaryan, who were totally outside their normal wheelhouse in terms of signings. They went and got two of the biggest stars they could get at the time because it just looked good on the books to kind of stabilise the process. I agree with the point on this. The thing that gets me on it is more it's just the divisions it's causing for no fucking reason. There's not a Liverpool fan who doesn't want Liverpool to just be brilliant. But when you get into the nuances of how you want to go about achieving that, it then becomes a really like petty back and forth backstabbing. Like everyone's got like here is without sin, cast the first stone. Well, you can't, because it's business. Nobody is without sin in the business world, and nobody with any opinion of anything has got a completely clean history behind them. So nobody should, you know, you're getting into that, like, nobody can have a debate on it because it's because everyone's the bad guy to the other side.
Like, I might be wrong, but I get this for me a little bit, so apologies if this is just a personal thing, but like, I don't think there's anyone out there who is like an avid FSG supporter who's going to be like crying if they...
There's no FSG.
If they sell the football team, no one cares. Mm-hmm. Like, it sounds as long as... No one's arsed. Like, they're not.
I care who they sell it to.
Yeah, that's the difference. Yeah. And again, my point is more on why is X buying us and what does it lead to. There's trepidation about it, but like, there's this camp that if you're not manning the barricades trying to push John Emery and tweet his wife, that all of a sudden that you love them and you know... You're in bed. It's not the case. I don't like the owners of footy clubs. It's kind of boring to me. I don't care.
Did anyone read Neil Atkinson wrote a thing? I think on this.
No,
this
but
week,
when yeah. he came in, he said he doesn't want to talk about the owners of Liverpool, didn't he?
Yeah. He reiterated a lot of stuff that we did when we did the podcast with Neil a few months ago, and it was that, and it was the kind of spot on thing is that I think what it boils down to is I like Liverpool being a football club that's self-sustaining. Because that means that it's far less likely to be absolutely catastrophically fucked into the ground down the line. And people might think this feels bad or whatever now, but it's not. It's genuinely not. I know it's ninth in the league. No one's saying that's good. But I mean, the overall health of Liverpool Football Club is, by and large, we're in the top 10. You know, most stable football clubs on the planet. You know, that's kind of...
It's just
of,
that the team's not performing right
exactly,
now.
Exactly. And for any go on, we can get delve into, you know, more investments and all that kind of stuff. Fine. But that's the most important point for me is that, you know, you can if you end up being a club that is reliant on spending above its means each and every year, then that is not a sustainable business model. And so you have to be the plaything of someone. And when you're the plaything of someone, if you've ever played with anything, you don't you don't play with the same toys for very long. You know, eventually you get bored of that thing and you move on to something else. And, you know, Chelsea wasn't quite the example of that because that was exacerbated by, obviously, the Russian sanctions. And if Chelsea have managed to come in and they've come in, Todd Bowley's come in and spent ludicrous amounts of money. But I don't, no one knows what that looks like in 5 years' time. You know, are they going to, is he going to spend 250, 300 net every year? He's not.
I suppose the flip side, though, Paul, to play devil's advocate, is can you win being self-sustainable? Because ultimately, that's what we're here for. We're here to win, aren't we? So I get it. No.
And again, at the risk of making myself sound pathetic, no. We're here because we love Liverpool Football Club.
Yeah.
You know, it's whether we win or lose is fucking absolutely fucking irrelevant. It doesn't change my love for the football team. But it is about, you know, you're right that there might be a world where if we want to, then you might need to enter into this world. But FFP still exists. I know we're saying it doesn't work, but it does. You to get round it, you've got to bend and break rules, and you've got to spend loads of money on lawyers, and you've got to do all loads of shady. You've got to do shady, underhanded shit to fucking get around FFP. So that's what you need. Maybe we need bigger bastards, yeah. or people more determined to win, and then that starts to put you into an even shallower pool of people that would, you know, of the line that's crossed, because that's what you got. Everyone's self-sustaining. Man City are self-sustaining. They are. It's just that they self-sustain by
getting the mates
by paying their mates a ton of money to sponsor them.
Allegedly.
You know? Allegedly, yeah.
I'll get a suit there. That was me, my management head coming on there for the
savers. Chloe, you got anything that's doing your head in?
Transfer talk.
Lack of.
Or too much thereof.
Well, we're just not going to sign anyone, so please stop telling me that we wanted Matheus Nunes 6 months ago, please. Sound nice one. Can't do much with that info, though, can I? Like, what's that benefiting me in my life, aside from getting more angry?
Yeah. Stop telling us players that Liverpool are going to buy in the summer.
Yeah, nice one.
Did you hear the news story about Kylian Mbappe rejected us in the summer?
I was the one who told you about it.
Yeah. How did you feel about that? Because, you know, that was a dead story that you passed on to me, just saying.
You asked for any... You were
and
doing
you gave
size?
Me news stories from the fucking summer.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, but you asked for some... So I didn't want you to not have a show, so I had to give you something.
Right.
You physically so it's put fine a text then. In the group chat asking for anything.
I didn't ask so for six-month-old information,
yeah,
to be fair. Like, what
old,
are you going to do with that
Nunes
fucking
minutes.
Stuff that we wanted in the summer, but you're okay passing the Mbappe stuff on?
No, I just... Well, see, Mbappe's different because Mbappe...
Mohamed Salah signed a new contract.
Mbappe apparently rejected us, which is just absolutely stunning. Loved that as well.
I'm not sure he rejected us. And do you want to know why? Because we didn't place a bid.
But do you want to know something? I didn't actually read the article. I just forwarded it to you when I saw it.
Thanks for that.
Right. So,
can I just say, that made the show.
Yeah. But this is what I mean.
Slow news day.
And with you on the transfer stuff, it's fucking deal my head.
We're not going to sign anyone, and it's annoying me, but if we're not going to sign anyone, just stop telling me.
The problem with this all is that nobody believes the legit journals anymore. And
because they've got like this rating on some fucking whoppers on Twitter that they believe.
Also
the fact that we were signing Luis Diaz until we definitely signed Luis Diaz. I think everyone is just hanging on. I think everyone's belief is they can't be that stupid that they're not going to sign anyone.
Well, we live in a post-truth society, so we don't believe anything ever anymore now because you can find
someone. See, I don't
believe that. Exactly. You can find someone to tell you what you want to hear. And what we want to hear is that Liverpool are going to sign footballers and brace yourselves. Because to go point, it's fucking the problem.
You know what makes it worse? Twitter blue. Yeah. Oh, can't trust anyone now.
Yeah.
Blue. He's got a blue tick.
He couldn't trust Twitter ticks anyway. You could. There was some account. I know. There was exactly the point. You can trust some of the accounts with blue ticks, but not all of them.
Yeah, now it's the other way around. Now it's very few of them. And yeah, I'm pissed off that every time I see something, I have to go and click on their profile and then hover over the tick to see what they are. So this person subscribed to it. Fuck.
This should have been your agony rant.
It took part of the head, all of it. And like, I've got the verified mentions tab on my phone, and it used to be quite empty, and I was full of people who paid for Twitter Blue. And fair enough, if that's what you want to do, that's absolutely fine. But
don't bother me.
No, it needs to be, like, they've gone gold on other things.
Oh, yeah.
There's Twitter gold, like BBC, Twitter, it's baffling, it's doing my head in. So I don't even know when
come and join me on Mastodon or whatever it's called.
Can you stay on it?
I'm there.
The only
that, I'm sorry, but that sounds like a
masturbating website.
Webcam. Yeah. Site, like,
I will definitely join you on it. the only thing that used to fool me was fake Paul Joyce. Because he was never blue ticked anyway. Yeah. Now everything's fooling me because everyone's got a fucking blue tick. So I can't even. Yeah, I'm jumping on the back of Chloe's agony. And if you're not going to sign anyone, why then? Why don't tell us what we are going to what we could have signed that we're going to sign in the summer? I'm fine. I'm very much aware that I'll cross that bridge when we get to it. Thank you very much. Mateus Nunez, welcome to Liverpool in July. I wouldn't have mind if someone else got signed before like 2 weeks.
Yeah. Also, the Jude Bellingham stuff, like, stop it. You've absolutely wrecked me head.
I feel like this segment was born for me and Chloe, by the way.
I don't know.
And do you know why me and Paul Allen's involved? Because this died. It was something died with regards to transfer chat 5 years ago.
Transfer and ownership chat.
It's water off a duck's back now if you talk to me about Jude Bellingham. I've lived through the Mbappe thing.
I lived through if falling apart under Roy Evans and having co-managers, and then falling apart under Roy Evans when we didn't sign Nicolas Anelka but signed Aladji Diouf instead, and then we brought Rafa Benitez in who guided us to a European Cup and an FA Cup, and then gradually had weird Liverpool fans start to like fucking turn on him because the dads didn't like him very much, and then he fought with the ownerships and fucking fell out, so we lost our probably the greatest manager we'd had in the Premier League era off the back of it, and going through it and through it and through it, it's just like I feel like when people go, why aren't you so up in arms about stuff? I genuinely feel like I'm like someone's give me a Ferrari and I'm a little bit upset because I've got to pay for petrol for it. You know what I mean? Or it's not quite as fast as it was in my dreams.
Do you remember being live on the internet for 12 hours only for Conor Bianca not to sign? Yeah. Like, you know, just, I don't know what happened. We were live for the whole day. Chris was a yellow giant banana fingers at one point. We were just
fucking yellow canvas shoes.
The people in the Dovey were desperate to kick. Desperate to kick us out, and we were like, "No, they're going to sign Conor Bianca." And then fucking Tony Barrett's tweet come through that we hadn't signed.
And the best thing about that, by the way, just because it's funny, but the serious tone on that is. Liverpool fans were up in arms over that transfer, and everyone hated Ian Eyre at the time, and it was all Ian Eyre's fault. And I know for a fact, because I was told by someone who was in the room, that it was all down to the fact that the owner of the fucking club was a lunatic and just decided, nah, I can't be arsed anymore. And he just had a change of whim, and it was done. It was signed, it was agreed. And Liverpool, like, legally could have pushed that through, but, like, to the point where it's a mad, like, you know, oil baron billionaire who literally, like, I mean, like, and it's a slight exaggeration for the point, but could have, he's got family and he's got, like, fucking all kinds. Like, you mean, he's not going to be pushing, you don't push things through against lunatics. So Liverpool had to put the tail between the legs and get off having not signed a player. And it goes back, it's like, the all we see is that, or what we judge on, and some people don't see it all. I've got people in here in the comments saying, when will you talk about FSG? We've literally just done fucking 15 minutes talking about it. You know what I mean? Because some people are either thick or don't care to be educated, and also take things at face value. One last point on this, Chloe. One comment, and it was from a guy called Winks in the comments. Is, problem is with FSG selling a stake, they did it before and put the money elsewhere. If they do that again, exactly where we are now, they need to sell fully. Does anyone want to put him right on this?
I would like to suggest that the minority stake for Redbird was in their holding group and not in Liverpool Football Club. Yeah. Whereas this time they're talking about a minority stake in Liverpool Football Club and not FSG.
Exactly. So yeah, everyone goes on about this. They sold a stake before. They sold a stake in a company, in a bigger in company FSG. In which Liverpool are a part of. It's nothing to do with Liverpool Football Club. And the idea that money was going to filter down to Liverpool, why would it? That wasn't the point. Anyway, but yeah, that these are the kind of things that I'm talking about. These that build up towards loads of anger and resentment. It's loads of little half truths and misheard, they'll misunderstood things. Whereas in reality, and someone said it in the comments as well, like my dad had said about just at some point. But oh yeah, he says John Mage said, shit, I've lost it. At some point, you know, there'll just be a new owner
the players go, the fucking manager goes, the board of directors will go, the owners will go, and the only thing that's left is the fans. And that's always been the way with football clubs. We're the only people who are going to stay for fucking ever. As simple as that.
What? And James Milner.
Milner 2027.
James Milner. Jesus Christ.
Okay, what do you all agony?
Well, like, mine was kind of that, I think it's the people. It's the people like losing their heads over the, getting a too involved with the ownership
you
stuff.
You give them the ick, apparently.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
It's the casual racism allegations that people throw around because you don't want a state owning your football club. And I just want to, there's a video called our stance on FSG and takeovers and all that on YouTube. If you're ever unsure, go back and check that out. But we were saying just to clarify the difference on these things for some people is, if individuals own things, I mean, everyone's got their own thoughts, feelings, opinions and stuff like that, but they're all just people, albeit wealthy people. So you do get people like, you see people, pictures of John Henry with Donald Trump. As a rule, you'd say Scousers and Liverpool fans don't like Donald Trump, so that would be a bit of a weird connection to see him have, but ultimately he's a private person and we don't want to know what his religious beliefs are because they're not central to his life and blah, 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 blah. And you can get that in all different kind of walks of life. But when you're owned by a state, it's the people who are ultimately kind of responsible for lots of these things on a wider scale.
Like being sold to Donald Trump is different than
exactly
being sold to someone who supports Donald Trump.
You're not being sold to America.
Well, they're writing the fucking laws, aren't they?
Exactly. That's the point. Being sold to people who could change the laws but choose not to is different to people who were raised just purely raised in a culture and have beliefs and all that. It's not a, honestly, again, it's just, but it's just the infighting and aggression for no fucking reason whatsoever. Everyone just wants Liverpool to be good. And look, and again, it boils down to it. Liverpool have been fucking dead good for years now. Really good. They've been as good as anyone. They could have, the only thing that's stood between us and two more European Cups and two more league titles has been two points, a couple of goals. And, you know, Liverpool would have had a ridiculous amount of silverware to add to just the bits that we've got. We've won everything in the last 4 years of football. 4 years. Like, I just can't, I don't have that passion to start setting fire to things over that, and that's just me. Maybe I'm wrong. But
I had that, but at the beginning of this season, because of the emotional turmoil that I went through last year, I just decided to not let football have such an overriding bearing on my life. It kind of is. I laughed myself through Brighton. Yeah, albeit it was kind of, I knew we were crap, but I didn't know we were that. And like the only way I could get through it was laughing. But like, I try not to get, like, losing a game of football or not winning something would put me in a mood for an entire week. And I've realised that you're just absolutely shite to be around if you like that.
Yeah.
So now I'm trying to just do everything. Yeah. I'm trying to not be like that so that I don't affect everything else in my life.
Can I go very, very quick on one very small agony rant while I'm off? The fucking Charity Shield, Kafich does the fuck,
yeah.
And that pisses me off as well. I thought we were, when we won that Charity Shield, I thought we were going to win everything. I thought we were the greatest team in the world ever. I thought we were amazing. That's done my head in as well. Why can't we be that again? We've been Kafich. Like my hotel that I was staying in Brighton the other day, the boss on the website, it was garbage. It's very much the same
as
Liverpool's Champions League. Yeah. Promised much, delivered nothing.
Let's move things.
Hey, what about my agony rant?
Oh,
I fucking hate that LeBron James kit.
Yeah,
I think it's fucking shit.
It's 3v1.
It just, all it needed to be was him fucking putting a ball into a basketball net a la fucking Michael Jordan. And didn't need to be like some fucking kid's shit Lego project on the front of a shirt.
No, so what you're saying is
Aston Villa's
no, it's fucking you're not saying ridiculous. You're not saying you hate the shirt. You're saying you hate LeBron James's logo.
Yeah, it's shit.
It looks like fucking Jesse Lingard's
fucking
celebration.
It's absolutely a bag of fucking wank.
The logo's not great, the shirt's worse.
The shirt's atrocious.
It's like,
who wants to wear pin fucking stripes in this day and age? Do you know what I mean? Who the fuck wants to wear a fucking basketball or a fucking, it looked more like a baseball shirt.
It's so bad.
Absolutely pathetic. And all of Nike need fucking sacking and rehiring.
If that's what they're going to give us.
That's just pathetic. They're all fucking losers who are still fucking sucking the mum's tits. Every one of them. Breast milk wankers.
I feel like we were quite calm, actually.
Yeah, I think we'd alright.
I mean, wow.
Sars LeBron.
Listen, football shirts come and football shirts go, Chris, but we're the fans of...
fans wearing shit fucking clobber. Wankers.
Outstanding.
I like the segment. It's brilliant.
Let's talk Liverpool versus Chelsea.
Do we have to?
I know, honestly. Should we just get Chris talking about more? Talk about more. I mean, to be fair, did you see the collaborative trainers that we did with them?
I liked them, though.
Oh,
they were
Steven.
Dog shit.
I don't remember. I was
right
with them.
I don't know where it was for that.
No, they were not worse.
It does look a bit like a nightshirt. Like,
they was not.
It looks like the kind of thing that, like, if Scrooge was a bit of a baller, that's what he would wear to sleep. You know, having kicked Tiny Tim down
the wrong way. It's JL, not LJ. It makes no sense.
It's Jesse Lingard, mate. I told you.
But the kit itself, it looks like a boiled sweet.
You're right. Quarter of them, please, mate.
Like a humbug, honestly. Yeah,
it's not great. I don't mind it. Generally, think it's fine. I have no strong feelings.
I'm not even a kit man. It just really pissed me off.
I'm not.
Generally, just go whatever. I'm looking at that shirt there, and that pinstripe shirt looks fucking lovely, but the other one doesn't.
Yeah, it's not really. It's stripes more than pinstripe, isn't it? The way they've done it. So.
Wallpaper.
Whatever.
I thought pinstripe was just a thin stripe.
Yeah, but I mean, it's got like more to it than just being the pinstripe, isn't it? Yeah, it's got three colours.
It's
got more to
it because it's fucking shit. Okay, so. Jesus Christ. I mean, it's the wrong colour as well.
There was a point you're like, ooh, this partnership with LeBron James, well, that's going to be like.
Just all but I wanted was basically PSG.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where you've gone wrong. False expectations.
You wanted the Michael Jordan kit.
Because to the point, you want LeBron James to have a rip-off logo of the Jordan dunk.
Just like us, yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted the Space Jam kit that he wore recently.
Yeah. I'm not getting that either. That's rubbish as well. That's the way. Okay, the Jordan Toon squad or the LeBron Toon squad?
Yeah, but again, we haven't got Jordan, have we?
No, exactly. I know, but fucking tell him here.
We're already getting knock off Jordan. Now we're getting knock off Jordan, knock off kits.
Yeah, it is very St. John's Market version of like,
they're bringing out a fucking sleeveless version that's just the vest as well.
I reckon I would have for the summer.
What?
I wouldn't wipe my arse with it.
I can't deal with people in vests. if you rocked up.
Not in here. Oh, I wouldn't come in here.
No, you'd be getting all kinds of side move off me in a vest. My fucking nipple would be winking at you. Like, fucking, you'd see that one long nipple hair I've got just fucking. No.
No, I can't. No.
Liverpool Chelsea then. I feel a little bit happier about this one going into the fact that we've won a game of football. They're pretty crap as well.
It's the two best shit teams in the league.
I feel like when Floyd Mayweather finally fought Pacquiao, like when they won like 45, I feel like that's what it is. This match would have been great 10 years ago, but now at the moment, it's the exact moment.
Yeah, this is like when Undertaker fights Triple H in that like Saudi Arabian pay-per-view on WWE. You're like, oh, wow, two big stars, and you see them move around, you're like, oh.
Yeah. As Pilicueta going up against Milner for the 90th time. Fucking brilliant, nice one. Jesus.
Yeah, you're right. But it's Chelsea in a way they spent so much money on.
This is not fair. How is that even fair?
No, but again, it's a good example of that, isn't it? You know, just they've done it again. They went big a few years ago, didn't they? When they bought a lot of like the next .. and they obviously picked up Pulisic and Ziyech and Havertz and Werner.
Sure, it was only 2 years ago, you know.
Yeah, maybe it's today, but that plan was obviously for them that to be the team that propelled them on, and it ultimately kind of did. They won the European Cup with it, but they're throwing money at a problem. But I still look at it and like, I don't understand what Chelsea are.
They've got 11 forwards.
I didn't feel like they needed.
So have we?
Yeah. None.
Yeah, no. But I never felt like Chelsea needed that much. That much loads doing, but they've done fucking loads.
They've got a serious problem in that one of their best players is still about 40 years old, and Thiago Silva. They need to fucking replace him.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah, like, can't, he's still the best player.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's what I mean.
Kante fell off, which was always going to happen because I don't think you can play his style without it's going to catch up with you at some point. I think Liverpool are going kind of going through a similar thing where if you do that much running at some point, you might only be young, but you've done the running of a 40-year-old yourself. So they've. But they have top goalies coming in. They've just, there. It feels very much like the lad who just keeps swiping right on Tinder, and at some point one of them will match you.
Yeah.
Like, if you just buy, if you keep buying,
speaking from experience,
No. Married from, no chance. But like, I'm just thinking, at some point three of these strikers must be good. Aubameyang. Yeah, we'll. Okay, no, move on.
Let's move on. Fucking okay. Mental. The fact that he's got no choice but to go back to Barcelona because he can't play for more than two clubs in a season. So he's like, Barcelona didn't want him. They got 12 million euros for him or something stupid like that. And they're basically going to get him back for less than that. It's crazy.
It's a bonkers club. They're doing mad things.
But everyone's going like about Mudryk, obviously, like, you know, what a good signing he is and all that. And yeah, sounds it could be absolutely sensational for them. But it's... it's mad, isn't it? I just, Graham Potter, I mean, I've got real Brendan Rodgers feelings about him. I think he's a really good coach. I think he's got a great football philosophy. But there is also a point where none of us are resistant to this idea of like, do you want this? Do you want this? Do you want this? Do you want this? You're not going to say no. You're not going to go from a world where you've got to sell your best players every transfer window to being like, nah, you're all right. I'll stick with Conor Gallagher, for example. Good player, by the way. But
I heard John Barnes, he's on the official Liverpool podcast, and he said something like, when he moved from Watford to Liverpool, the difference was you had to win every game. You could play well at Brighton, for example, Potter, and lose, and get a nice round of applause, and you've done well. You have to win at Chelsea. There's no, it doesn't count. Like, if he doesn't win soon, he'll be sacked. And I don't care what anyone says, and I know he's not Roman Abramovich anymore, but the culture of that football club exists, that they'll sack him because... You just don't get time. It's not going to be like Arteta or Arsenal where they're going to go, you've got 4 years and we're trusting the process. There's no process because the process is spend. So it does feel like it's been a big jump. You reference Rodgers, I think it's a good one. The Swansea, the Liverpool gap, he nearly got there, but ultimately it felt like it was one step too many. And he's gone to Celtic under one. He's done pretty well at Leicester, all told, actually. You know, he's won trophies there as well. It felt like no one's ever going to turn the Chelsea job down, especially like you say, from Brighton to Chelsea. Because if you say no now, and Brighton end up falling off a cliff, that chance is gone. You've got to take the jump. It's a chaotic time to take over a football club anyway, and it just feels like that sometimes when you're watching him and you're watching the team, he's been swept up in this whirlwind that he can't quite control. At Brighton, it felt like he had control over everything pretty much.
But he's a manager. I think that he needs time. He needs time to integrate his tactics. It's a team that's more than the sum of its parts. It's a classic fucking good coach thing. And what he's got is a load of fucking good players, but not got the time to coach them. Yep. And that's not going to work, full stop.
Mm-hmm. He does look like he's aged about 40 years there in the several.
He's got Costas bags.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I like him. And they'll give us a game at the weekend, he
makes you look good for 40.
Thanks, Chloe. Really?
Is he 40?
No, I don't know. Yeah.
Should we check? No. Nothing positive can come from that. Thanks again, Chloe.
Anytime.
I don't really know where to follow. Thanks very much. Where we're at, to bring it back to the sort of footy in the situation where we're at and to go back to the idea of turning the corner, we can't afford to lose this game. Yeah. You know, and the problem we've had, and this has been the season throughout, is that when
Europa Conference League plays on the line.
No, I know. but when you lose against teams that you're not meant to lose against, it means that you don't get the leeway to lose the games that you should or can lose. And that's where we've been at. You know, we're left with situations where like we had to go to Old Trafford and get a win. You don't go and win at Old Trafford, you know, you can't bank on those things. It being at Anfield is a big help. But look, this is the 9th and 10th currently best sides in the Premier League going head-to-head. If anyone has got ambitions of not being that, then neither club can really afford to drop points here. But again, look at the Liverpool podcast with Liverpool fans. It's a fucking huge game of football.
It is a huge game of football. I mean, it's Chelsea v Liverpool. You take the context of where we are any season, that is a massive, massive game of football. I remember the first time we lost out by a point, I think we played them second to last game, and I thought to myself, you know what, if we do Chelsea, if we win Chelsea, I reckon we've won the league. And obviously Salah scores that unbelievable goal. There's a lot of history between us anyway, but when you add on the fact that we're both two struggling teams, we're both losing to, I mean, we drew to Fulham, they lost to Fulham, but we've lost to Nottingham Forest, which is absolute boss. There's no...
We can beat Everton.
Yeah. I know. We've got no margin for error, and it helps us at Anfield because the crowd's behind us, and we should show up. We need the crowd to be there. Liverpool need to give the crowd a reaction, though. Something to get us up for it. I mean, we're already up for it, but you need something in the game so it doesn't go flat. The first place to start with this is just don't, once again, go back to the simple part, be defensively solid, don't lose your individual battles, put one on people, let's see what we field and who we field, because attacking, I mean, there's been games where we've created loads of chances, but then there was games like the other day where we didn't have anything going forward that much. You know, Harvey Elliott won the strike, but aside from that, we had a couple of half chances in there. We need to get the structure of and the basics of it all correct.
I think
first.
If it goes down to that, I think if we do, I think we'll win, because I think we've actually got more quality than them, which is mad because they spent all the money. I don't know enough about Mudrick. What's his name?
Mudrick.
I mean, by all accounts, he should be great, but I don't know. He got Joao Felix and then he got himself sent off, so he's suspended. But for all the money they spent, they actually lack quality. I think Liverpool have got more high end talent on our team, I think, than they've got. They haven't got a Mo Salah. They haven't got Alisson. They haven't got Trent.
They've got Kovacic in midfield though.
He's very combative.
Yeah, he always plays well.
And he's a very good
player.
They've got good players. But I'm like going back to Kovacic's point. If Liverpool don't shoot themselves in the face, they should have the quality to win.
I love that. Liverpool don't shoot themselves in the foot this season. They shoot themselves in the face.
Yeah, because honestly, they've been some of the things that I've seen this team do is have been so dumbass.
I just think we need to be the least shit.
That's what I'm saying.
This weekend, to win the game, that's honestly it.
Kepa will throw you one in, or someone will do something mad, and they'll be looking at going, we can press him into big, we can make a mistake out of him. If everyone just keeps the powder nice and dry, I still maintain that with Nunes coming back, with Salah, with Thiago, with Trent, with Robertson, with Alisson, we should have it too much for them. But
they've got players there who can take a game away from you. But your point is kind of like, we've got more tried and tested in this side, proven at that level.
They've got moments though, like the other season where Kai Havertz scores from a header and it's just lackadaisy by Liverpool Football Club. We've got moments like that in us. We've done it all the time. How many goals have we gifted to people at the feet?
Give it to them in front of our goal. Yeah.
I am really looking forward to the resumption of the Mo Salah versus Kalidou Koulibaly contest.
He's been a bit rubbish for them, hasn't he?
I mean, I've got no idea how good he's been for Chelsea, but I know that everyone was telling me for years how good Koulibaly is. And every time he comes against Mo Salah,
he's not looked that good.
He just absolutely had him on toast. Hopefully it's more of that than the other.
I just want to see a performance like we saw in the first half against Wolves. Yeah. That's all I need to see. Liverpool apply themselves. Liverpool put pressure on Chelsea and make it fucking difficult.
I know this isn't the build-up before we'll do that later down the line, but like, I wonder how many of that team from Wolves have played themselves into the team. Jürgen's plans might have been not to play them, but I'm certain there's no. If he goes back to the Brighton team, obviously add Darwin in for Ox perhaps, or for whatever, for Gap or whatever, I can't get my head around that. I think you've got to reward a couple of
you can't
choosing.
Get your head around it unless they put a performance in, but that's the nature of the whole thing, isn't it? You know, I agree.
You trust them too though.
There is a point where you can put somebody in and they do well, and then the next guy goes, fucking hell, I have to pull it out now.
Yeah.
And that's how you build a squad.
What you wanted me to do.
Tackle. To run. Yeah.
You wanted me to kick the ball. Yeah. What?
Lots of people talk about Robertson's form going up when Kostas came in. It's that simple. You now know there's a credible threat behind you, in a Bajcetic and for Fabinho or whatever, a Cater for a Jordan Henderson, you might see a step up. Look, don't get me wrong. I'd rather have Cater in this side over Jordan Henderson this weekend against Chelsea. I really would.
I think he will as well.
And I hope that he does. And I hope he plays him alongside Thiago. I think it might be one game too soon for Bajcetic, just for honest. I think Fabinho's going to play in there. Oh, he had cramp after 70, didn't he? But I do feel like a Fabinho, Cater and Thiago midfield is probably the most likely. And I think if they play in the same way as they did the other day, and not the same way as they did when Henderson was in there, then we've got a chance.
No, I agree with that. And that's it. You know, Bajcetic, brilliant. Yeah. What a talent. He's 18. You know, we need to be careful with him. You know, you want him for 10 years, not to panic and run the risk of ruining him because you've put in too much too soon. If he can just make himself a useful player for the next few weeks, rest of the season, even better, then that's great. We've maybe stumbled upon something. And again, what you've got to do for me with Pochettino, because he's so young, the best case scenario for him is you get to the summer and you've managed his first season as a senior footballer to a point where maybe you don't need to go and spend £50 million on another lad in the summer. And that £50 million goes towards a bigger transfer fee for someone better somewhere else or whatever. That's what the model's meant to be. You know, these are the lads are meant to, the young lads, the ones you take punts on are meant to step up and become more than they're worth. What we don't want, you know, it'd be lovely to spend 120 million on every footballer that we bring in, but nobody can. Ultimately.
On the flip side, I'd pick him. If I was confident he'd get for 90 minutes. The other day was a bit of a red flag that he got to. I know he's been injured. He had the hip issue, didn't he? I don't know how much he's been able to train and stuff, but getting cramp after 70 at Wolves in a game where you've actually not done as much, that much in terms of. In theory, it should be harder against
it's
Chelsea.
It is
different. So if I was confident I could get him, he would last, I probably would pick him, to be honest with you, because. He did the basics and he kicked the ball, mad that and ran after it and stuff like that. Did the absolute basics of it. I'm just not quite sure you could get through the game. It could be an option where he comes on, rather where you've got half an hour like he did a little bit against Aston Villa.
I think what that midfield did with him in it and again Keita and Thiago, which we talked about at the top, is that they just kick people. And they got, and they were just really close. Yeah, but they were, but like again, it's not that they haven't ran at times. It's that we've ran at stupid times. The balance has been wrong.
And really slowly.
No, we
starting position has a lot to fucking do with it.
Yeah.
Like if Jordan Henderson's starting on the halfway line and doing a press, there's 20-meter run. If you're 10 meters closer to that, it's a 10-meter run.
Exactly.
You can run less but run smarter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's what Liverpool's midfield did.
Yeah. And we're not asking, when you know, we didn't ask Bacetic to go and be an extra attacker, which Fabinho was taking upon himself and Henderson takes upon himself. Fabinho played in the position that he was in and everyone worked around him. That's where we're at with this, is Liverpool need to just go and, you know, whoever comes in needs to know that's the level. I want Chelsea to be uncomfortable. I want them to absolutely come off the park hating every moment they've been at Anfield, because that's what Anfield is. And let's be fair, our Anfield form has been pretty good by and large still. Not to the highest of high peaks, but we've still been pretty good.
Leeds' only win away from home was at Anfield then.
Yeah.
These things do.
And look, that was the game that ended Virgil's run of not losing in the league at Anfield and all that kind of stuff, wasn't it? You know, and obviously the Leicester game, we were shocking at that. But the reason Liverpool are ninth in the table is not because... Well, yeah, but we're not ninth in the table because of our home form. We're ninth in the table because of our away form. Yeah. So, like, you know, we've still got that advantage.
Not sure
we can make that uncomfortable.
Quite true, because if we'd have won more games,
if we won one more at Anfield, we'd be eighth or whatever.
The bigger problem is the away form.
Yeah, exactly. But that's the point. The mission's got to be everyone on the same page, everyone making this uncomfortable for Chelsea, whoever comes in and plays the game.
And to get Nike to change that LeBron kit. That's the other mission.
Unlucky.
Sign a player. Sign a club. New kits. Win Chelsea. We box Liverpool off.
It's a pretty short list. You could box that in an afternoon.
Piece of piss.
I don't do lists. Yeah.
Well, apparently the Twitter sale went through quickly. Apart from the fact that they were talking about it 2 years ago, it went through like a flash.
And it was
and then he tried to pull out.
Wasn't that a publicly owned company as well? Like you could just go and buy it. Like you could just do that.
Right.
And now it's worth £6 billion.
Right. Before we go. Before we go, you. Chris Pajak, are doing the deep dive this week?
I am.
What are you doing on?
I am doing it on that table there.
Doing it on Josh?
On Josh! those buffies that you eat off a person.
I don't think we're paying him enough. For what I've got planned.
Or maybe is that how you plan on bringing the cost down a little bit? Like, who knows?
We are going to do it on the conundrum that we think Jurgen Klopp has with Harvey Elliott in his position.
Okay.
Because I think most people would agree. Where the fuck does he fit into this side? I'm not sure he's a midfielder, and I don't think he can force his way into Salah's position, so we're going to do something around that.
Okay. Interesting stuff, Steve. You've got Geno insight?
Friday this week, yeah, Geno's moving, just to let you all know. We Tuesday, Thursdays, but it's moving to Friday. Neil was asked me to move it for 1 week only. It's going to Friday, so obviously tons to talk to Neil about in terms of not all the transfers not making. But also, like I say, it's just the behind, what's being said, what's being thought. So yeah, Geno insight will be Friday morning.
He's not written the agenda, I don't know if anyone can tell.
What was I meant to say?
What was on the show, not when it was. We'd already discussed when it was.
Yeah, well, what's on it?
Yeah.
I don't know, because I've not done it yet. It's still Tuesday, what the fuck hell? I'll find out what happens over the next 2 days will be what's on Geno Insight.
Hey, Mbappe. Mbappe. 6 months ago, what are you talking about?
Oh yeah, it's Wednesday, isn't it?
Yeah.
2 days ago, yeah, I'll do the agenda till then.
All right, Steve, fine.
Chloe, are you doing anything this week?
I'm off tomorrow.
Nice. We've got, yous are off on a top, we can't tell too much, but you're both off on a top secret shoot for something that we're planning to unveil over the next 2 years, which is insane.
Wow, great.
Yeah.
But
I can't wait.
We've got a new show, very, very exciting.
Spoilers,
YouTube
series. We might be trying to buy Liverpool.
Spoilers, Steve might get a hair transplant.
Spoilers, he's not.
How do you know?
You'd have done it by now.
Okay. I'd grow me. I'd be like Martin Skirtle.
You don't own a t-shirt that wasn't one that we gave to you. So, like, the idea is that you're going to go get a fucking hair transplant.
A brand offered me one for nothing. Oh. I got offered one by a Turkish place to do it if I'd done some social promotion.
Your teeth?
And also, the people who tattoo hair onto your head, one of those companies got in touch with me and said they'd do it for nothing.
Oh, please, can we do... Can you?
No.
It's clearly not into... Okay, it's fine.
No, I'm not into getting needles stuck in my head.
I can see that.
Like fucking, what's his name?
Hellraiser.
I'm all right. I'm fine with it. But yeah, the two different brands are offering me deals to do that for them in terms of... I'm guessing they would have wanted a promotion on Redmen. No, I don't think they wanted it just off me. Like a warm
deal. On your Facebook.
No,
can we sign that deal behind his back?
For me. Please, if we do it now, it won't be as big a shock in the next few years.
It'll be like your security coming back.
Just tighten up the edges here, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Very quickly, I've got the agenda open.
No, it's blank, isn't it?
Moment.
It's blank.
There's nothing on there.
Cool.
I bought my show.
The Bite Size Podcast available if you need more on a daily basis. Chris did that today. That's up on Spotify, iTunes, all the podcasting services as well. And if you ever want more, come and join us. We're going to be carrying on the chat. We're going to be doing a little bit about Gary Lineker coping in the face of major sex noises and a few other bits and pieces over on the Red Men Podcast Extra. So, yeah, we're carrying on the chat. It is the more X-rated version of this that we can't put on YouTube. So if you want to hear us chat about random biff, and Gary Lineker sex noises, then come and join us by scanning.
Put a little surprise on that scan here code as well, so you have to scan that to find out what I've done. Ooh. And then you have to sign up at Redmen Plus.
Go ahead. So if you're on YouTube, scan the QR code or go to redmenplus.com and see how badly Chris is lying.
Is the sex noise going to come through this? If I...
Yeah. Thanks very much.
What the fuck was that? Someone just choked the donkey.
The Redmen Originals podcast for this week. We'll see you over on redmenplus.com. Have a boss week.
Thank you so much for that. I hope you enjoyed it. If you want more Red Men in your ears, then consider signing up to redmenplus.com. You get everything that's on the website in video and, if you want it, in podcast form. From £5 a month, redmenplus.com, you get 2 free items of merchandise every single season. If you sign up as a club legend, you get 20% discount codes every single month, exclusive discounts from our partners, as well as your name in the credits and each and every Red Men Plus show.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.